So glad you're here. 15 after 8. Yeah, somehow the time gets away from us, but always good conversation. To join in, 770-5633, 770-KMED. The email, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Sure, will be your Facebook friend. Try to catch up a little bit there on the weekend. Wanted to have a discussion here this morning about the Klamath Dams. We've talked with folks from the KBRA in the past year, also the Klamath Off Projects Water Users Association. And joining me here in studio, some folks that are behind a, I guess, Save the Dams group, for lack of a better term. Kind of wanted to get into the history of how do we get to the point where, in order to save the earth, we're going to blow up infrastructure. But that's kind of what has been decided up to this point. Now, joining me here in studio is Gary Lake. Gary, how are you doing this morning?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Gary, tell us a little bit about you. You are with or a member of the Shasta tribe?
I am a Shasta tribal member, yes.
Okay, very good.
Conemaugh Shasta.
All right, very good. What was that other last name?
Conemaugh Shasta, Salmon River area.
Okay. All right. So is that like an Indian word?
Yes, it is.
Actually. Yeah, I'm just uptight. I don't know what that means. That's why I'm asking you, all right? And Darren Thornton is in here. Darren, we talked with you before in the past. Now, you have been, I don't know if you've been a member or been involved with the Klamath Off Projects Water Users. Have you been involved?
No.
In no? Or just kind of a friend of theirs?
Actually, a good friend of Gary's from back in the old days of junior high.
Oh, okay. So you two have just known each other for a long,
long
time.
For a long time.
So what is your role in this fight, as it were?
Well, I'm a steward of the land, a huntsman, outdoorsman, and raising my kids to be that way. And I truly think that we all are somewhat environmentalists. And I believe that we should save these dams based on junk science that they're presenting. And I don't agree with taking out a zero emissions project. You know, it's a very clean hydroelectric project.
That's right. Okay, very good. So, Gary, why don't you take us through a bit of the history? Because from what I understand, did not the Shasta tribe kind of get together with the Klamath tribe in order to help make the current KBRA what it is?
Actually, no.
No?
No. That was, the Shastas, the Shasta people have been excluded purposely from the beginning, for the most part. Now, just a real quick background, I was in 2000, I was a councilman for the Cutter tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And then through a series of events, I became not a councilman and then eventually became a vice chairman for the Shasta people.
Yeah, politics.
And it's a crazy story. But so basically, the Shasta people have been excluded. And the reason is because 50% of the Klamath River is within the original Aboriginal ancestral territory of the Shasta people. All four dams reside within the Shasta territory.
Why was the Shasta kind of excluded from this conversation? It would seem to certainly be part of the talk.
Well, because the Shasta people are against dam removal. We have a very extensive knowledge of the river going back thousands and thousands of years. And the Coho were never indigenous to that portion of the Klamath River.
But the Coho salmon has been the stalking horse for its removal.
The spotted owl.
Yeah, the spotted owl of the dam.
Right.
Yeah, as it were then. Okay, go ahead.
Well, and that, you bring that up. When I was a councilman for the Karuk tribe, the Karuk Department of Natural Resources, their employees, at the time Leif Hillman was running that show and now is again, tribal council was approached and basically told that if we take the Coho salmon, we can turn it into the spotted owl and run the white man, the miners, and the Shasta people off the river and steal the land and water rights back.
So, okay. So, in other words, you have like a dual lineage with you, then you're kind of like a Karuk. Karuk and Shasta then? Is that
not to confuse the issue, but I don't think I have Karuk in me at all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd you manage to get on the council?
Part of my family is, prior to me, is enrolled in the Karuk tribe.
Oh, okay.
And I was promptly disenrolled when I went after corruption and water issues.
Oh, okay. I'm starting to understand a little bit more now. Okay.
Right.
Okay, I see. All right. So you had the temerity then to challenge the legitimacy of these claims because Kurok, of course, was going to, I guess, partner with the Klamath then? Is that
yeah,
Klamath tribes?
Pretty much. I mean, back then, I'm not sure, you know, I think it was just kind of an overall plan that, that was gelling to take over the Klamath Corridor and basically socioeconomically destroy Siskiyou County so that there could be this, you know, great takeover. You know, it's I don't think the plan is a very, very intricate and detailed plan, but the, I think the Karuk leadership. Now, when I say the Karuk or Kerok, I just want to say that the Karuk people are very good people. The vast majority of them are wonderful, hardworking people, family and friends. There's a small group, the leadership and specific individuals within the Department of Natural Resources that are leading this this boondoggle, this scam.
And it seems like it's about effectively a depopulation.
Really. Absolutely.
Because how are people going to be able to survive, live, and or thrive, or grow, or fish,
agriculture,
or agriculture, or any of the rest of
recreational suction dredging is gone.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's, yeah, they're just, it's a depopulation effort.
Okay, so why hasn't, if you're saying here from the inside that it is a corrupt, that it has been a corrupt plan right from the very start, why hasn't anything been done about this? When you raise these concerns, it would seem to me that Department of Justice folks around the country would certainly be very interested if, oh, okay, we're going to get together and create a spotted owl so we could throw everybody off the land except us, apparently.
I think that they are interested in my personal opinion. They were involved in a very extensive forensic audit that some really good people on the tribal council there and I and a gentleman by the name of John Martinez brought in to basically try to clean up the tribal council. Ironically, that was my election platform, was to go in and clean up the tribal council.
No wonder you got kicked out then. Who wants a clean council anywhere? I'm teasing about that, half teasing. But
yeah.
Okay, so where are we right now? Where do we stand? Because I've talked with Tom Malams at the Klamath Off Project Water Users Association, and he said that at this point, there is not funding to complete the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement as it has, has it been agreed? Has it not been agreed? I mean, I know we're getting billed for it on the Pacific power bills each month, but that's about all I know. I'm not that knowledgeable about it, and I'm sorry to say so.
I personally think that all the whole coho and all the issue out green algae or blue green algae, and by the way, spirulina, I guess is what's called, people eat it all the time, is a red herring. I think that the true agenda is a charter mandate, and basically
charter mandate from whom?
Basically, the KBRA, the combination of the two agreements would create, in a very, 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 very vague language, but create a charter mandate. Basically, the stakeholders. And they would create an entity that supersedes all city, county, and state governments. They would be basically like an Indian tribe or another government from a different country.
So in some respects, KBRA is effectively regional governance on a large scale.
Yes. In my opinion, yes.
Okay. All right. Gary Lake is here. And, of course, we have Darren Thornton here also, and we're talking about the KBRA. We're talking about the tribe issue, a little bit of the history here. I want to continue that conversation here. And so you're saying it's corrupt to the core right from the start, which is, of course, a very strong thing to say. I imagine that your phone will be ringing later today.
I've changed my number several times.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. And what is this going to mean? Join in the conversation. Question, comment, 770-5633. 826, Mac with Gary Lake and Darren Thornton, and we're talking about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. Now, he has a website which he has just cranked up here called Save the Dams, and I was just wondering, of course, if maybe it was too late to do that before we get to the calls here. Gary, you want to take a little stab at that?
I don't believe it is too late. I believe that if the people get together and quickly educate themselves, I believe that there's an opportunity to save the dams. Now, some dams need to be removed, but the Klamath River is a reverse watershed. It starts out, very phosphate, nitrate rich. You know, it's Klamath Lake, the Klamath Basin.
It has been a dead and dying lake for thousands of years, from what I've been told.
feet, probably millions. Who knows? Yeah.
Okay. And it's just kind of the nature of the way what the rainfall and everything else in there. It's just the nature
Correct.
Of the beast.
And it actually scrubs and cleans the closer it gets to the ocean. And so, you know, of course, as everybody knows, the coho salmon is a cold water fish. So, in 1851, George Gibbs, wrote in his journal when he was signing the treaties that the water was, in the areas, tributaries in the Klamath was tepid and unfit for human consumption.
But we are supposed to believe this this fairy tale, then, that the salmon are indigenous to Klamath Lake, Harper Klamath Lake?
Well, that's what they're pitching.
Uh-huh.
And I got to tell you, the Cutter leadership and Craig Tucker, my hat is off to that guy. He is a smooth operator, slick, very slick. And he's basically selling, this completely fabricated story to the general public in the name of environmentalism. And in reality, he's destroying a very – sometimes man screws up and does something right, mm-hmm. And the four dams – really are a significant asset to the health of the Klamath River.
What about, what dog does the Shasta tribe have in this? Because you said you've been excluded
right.
from the whole conversation.
Well, basically, through the KBRA and the KHSA agreement, it effectively takes the Karok or the Cutter tribe, depending on the pronunciation, and the Klamath tribe. They split 50% of all, they basically get fishing rights and split 50% of the entire Klamath 50% of the Klamath River within Shasta territory between the two of them. And, the Cutter tribe, is a Treaty Q, by the way, a supplement to Treaty Q tribe, which it is my understanding that used the Shasta's Treaty R to get their federal recognition. And so what they're basically trying to do is, socioeconomically exterminate the Shasta people through soft genocidal practices and take over the territory so that they can manage and financially gain off of the natural resources.
So when you don't have water, you don't have the ability to farm and live and do all the rest of this. So this is where you come off with the soft genocide, as it were.
Correct. Well, yeah. I mean, basically this is the final nail in the coffin to the Shasta people. We've been excluded. You go to Wikipedia,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And you look up Upper Klamath, definition Upper Klamath, and you go in there and you look at it. Nowhere in there is the Shasta people mentioned. And it cracks me up because it's always, the Cutterook are saying, and this is the leadership that, once again, I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about a very small group of people, the leadership.
It's the native tribe version of Washington, D.C., right?
There you go, okay. Yeah. But what basically – what they are doing is the Cutter leadership is they are just trying to push the Shasta people out and usurp their history, their geographic region. They never were in Wairika. They never were in Happy Camp. And Happy Camp is their headquarters, and it's 11 miles upriver from the Cutter border, which is Clear Creek. And they're you put the Cutter territory next to the Shasta's territory, mm-hmm. historically, and it's like putting a peanut next to a grapefruit,
But the peanut seems to be calling the shots.
Exactly.
All right. 8:30 on the Bill Myers Show. Hello, Tom. Question, comment, go right ahead.
Good morning. I always thought the environmentalists were scared of the Indian tribes. I'm glad I was wrong. I'm glad you guys are involved and have to fight, too. My problem is, not a problem, I don't really care. The lower Klamath River, Indians fishing with nets. Uh-huh. How many salmon does they take out of the river with the nets? Is that causing a problem or the reason to take out the dams?
All right, Tom, thanks for that. Is that something you can address? Is that something you're familiar with?
Well, I'm familiar with. They do have rights. They have treaty rights. And the Hoopaw and the Yurok, they do a gill net across the river, and they do take a substantial amount of the fish that come up the river, and then again they've been there time immemorial, and there's a real serious aspect to really what is being taken for culture and sustenance and what is being sold commercially. I mean, if we're trying to save the fish, that's something to look at. Gill net size. Mm-hmm. It seems like the fish, from when I talk to the fishermen, especially Jim Burney, which owns a restaurant and Blue Heron and up right below the dam, you know, he's saying that the fish size are getting smaller and smaller. So I think that there's a very serious, you know, array of issues.
But they're not getting smaller because of the COPCO and the Iron Gate and all the rest of these dams, right?
No, and I'm not an authority, but I would think that the gillnet size has a lot to do with, you know, and they're pretty good at, you know, trying to be environmentalists and stewards of, you know, the river. However, there is a lot of gillnets down there.
But that is a different fight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's talk with Don. Hello, Don. How are you?
Yeah, thanks. Tom, you're fighting an uphill battle. It seems whenever you're dealing with an agenda that's political, facts.
It's Gary, by the way.
Oh, Gary. Excuse me. Facts mean less in the debate. And correct me when I'm wrong, but before the dams on the Klamath, the river could run dry in some drought years, correct?
Absolutely true.
And isn't a dry river bad for fish?
Unless they're flying fish.
Yeah, now, oh.
Maybe there are flying fish we're unaware of here.
Now you see, I
flying coho.
I knew John Boyle.
That's in Seattle.
And I'd like to get his input on this. But the point is, with dams, we can even control river temperature and keep it flowing in
correct.
Dry years. So those are facts that are not being brought to the table.
And very good points. And something to go along with that, you know, it's a known fact that the Indian guides just below, they never could get, the salmon really never got over past Keno. There's some natural shelves and barriers that people don't talk about. So, those water temperature and natural barriers are two things that the opponents or the people that are for dam removal are hiding from the general public.
All right, let's talk with Earl. Hello, Earl. You're with Gary Lake from Save the Dams. Darren Thornton in here, too, helping out. Good morning.
Good morning. You brought up the word stakeholder. Stakeholder is one of those words that have a vague meaning, and it's vague so people can be manipulated and the issues can be manipulated.
Well, stakeholder is a bureaucratese kind of thing, but stakeholder,
right,
basically
right.
Someone who has a dog in the fight. How about that?
But Bill, here's the thing. When it's vague, it's manipulated. It's like the word, instead of a pet owner, they call you a guardian. Mm-hmm. It's because they're about to take away your rights, and so you won't know that that's what they're going to do. They use a word that's vague, and it's important for Gary to know this and the other people in this fight. That you need to start using, find a different word, an accurate word, so that way you get to retain your rights, and the other people that are fighting the federal government and the state government and the other bureaucratic agencies know that, be careful about the words that they're using because they're trying to take away your rights through those words.
All right. Thanks for the call there, Earl. I don't know if there's anything that you wanted to weigh in on that or not, Gary.
No, that was very, very, very well spoken.
Okay. So what can actually be done at this point? Now, on SaveTheDams.com, you have a lot of videos, a lot of news, a lot of and also I know there was the recent meeting over in Siskiyou County
mm-hmm.
the other week, which seemed to have been quite successful about defending rural America effectively. It was really kind of what that was all about. Sheriff Lopey.
Yes.
Of Siskiyou County.
Yes.
He's involved with you
yes.
guys.
Yes, Sheriff Lopey is doing a fantastic job in coordination efforts. And, you know, he is a true champion. He, with amongst a group of other sheriffs, both in California and Oregon, Gil Gilbertson of Josephine County, that guy is awesome in what they're doing.
Has Jackson County signed on to this yet?
You know, I'm not, I don't know. Everybody that I know that knows Mr. Winters or Sheriff Winters, basically, you know, I don't think he's really, you know, paying attention. Maybe he is paying attention. I don't know. I couldn't really say. He should be, though, because they're coming after Southern Oregon's water right now.
See, that was what I wanted to get to now, because we talked a little bit about the history. What does this mean for Southern Oregon? And I think this has to do with the Talent Irrigation District. Darren, I think that's something you've been looking at. I know that I've chatted with the folks over at TID. They're not concerned about this. They're not concerned about the KBRA. It's happening over there. No big deal. No foul for us.
They have another wolf at their door right now that they're fighting. So their opinion was, we're going to deal with this battle first that we're dealing with, and we understand this is on the horizon, but right now we have wolves at the door on a different sort. And so they're involved in some some cost issues and litigation and other things that they're doing. But what he explained is that there's going to be about 27,000, almost 30,000 acre feet of water that is lost. And, you know, an acre foot is 1 acre of water a foot deep. And at 30,000 roughly acre feet, that's many, many millions of gallons of water that will be no longer available through the Rogue Basin watershed, through Howard Prairie, Hyatt Lake, Little Hyatt, and Immigrant. So that's where I come in, because we have recreation, we have fishing, and most important to all of us is agriculture, which is the big boom here. Southern Oregon is known for its pears and now for its wineries. And so those vineyards and orchards are going to lose 30,000 acre feet of water.
What percentage of the valley's agriculture water would that be, or might that be?
I do not know what the total percentage is based on what their flow is, but if the dams are removed, guaranteed right now, TID says about 30,000 acre feet will be gone.
Now, I've been told by other people in the know that TID has mentioned that, well, it's okay, we'll line the ditches or we'll pipe them.
They're currently piping them, and they're currently lining some shotcrete. But you still have evaporative loss in open ditch.
Okay.
But you also affect somewhat of groundwater because you don't have that soaking of that irrigation water.
So in many ways, the 30,000 acre feet coming over from the KBRA has also been filling up South County wells.
Yes.
Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes. And so if you have to then go to sprinklers and piping, that cost to you as the agriculturist, whether it be a vineyard or an orchardist, is pretty expensive when you used to flood irrigate. Now, some of the orchards have gone to sprinklers, and it's a pretty effective way to irrigate. But if you have to put in a well and then pay for the pumps, the piping, and everything else.
And what about people with existing wells?
Well, there we go.
Too bad, so sad?
These are all questions that I'm after.
Okay. All right. Very good. We'll be back talking with folks from, I guess, Save the Dams. SaveTheDams.com. And a big meeting is going to be happening here in a few weeks. We'll talk about that more when we get back and tell you what can be done and helping join in on that fact. And we are back with Gary Lake, Darren Thornton, talking about saving the Klamath Dams, which I know, sounds kind of strange to be talking about these days, but it's interesting when you look at the record, especially when it comes to the I don't know if you go so far as to call it fraudulent, but certainly questionable studies and agendas. I'm looking at here at this is a now I'm reading here. This is from the Karuk Tribe of California. This is the minutes
of the meeting. Minutes, yes.
This was the minutes of the meeting, and you were a member at that time, Gary.
I was a council member, yes.
Gary Lake, before they kicked you out.
Yes.
Because you dared question.
I questioned many things within that current leadership.
Okay. And this was a part of the minute. Sandy Tripp. A written report was included in the packets, and Sandy was to present to review it with the council. She addressed questions and concerns the council members had. Discussion was had regarding coho salmon and whether or not they were ever present in the mainstream and tributaries of the Klamath, like we've been talking about. Sandy states NMFS has scientific proof that there were coho present, and if they can make the river conducive to these fish, they can work towards getting them off the endangered species list and get rid of the NMFS presence. That's the National Marine Fisheries. Okay.
Yes.
Council states it may be easier to prove the coho were never present, and also the comment was made that if they were never here, then they should not be encouraged to come back.
Correct.
Now, this was December of 2001, folks. They were talking about this. Robert also inquired how the coho affect steelhead and the chinook. He's also interested in reading the study that proves the coho were here. Sandy states she will forward copies of the studies to the council. She states the tribal environmental plan is 50 to 60% completed, and she has plans to have the council members review it and approve it at the next meeting. She states it will detail what they have done and where they expect to go in the future. And let's see, she also submitted a contract between them and the Intertribal Fish and Water Commission in the amount of $180,000 for the hiring of fishery biologists and natural resources technicians to perform water-related tasks. She states they currently have no biologist on staff. Having this technical data and expertise will give them more credibility into issues and involve them more in the studies that go on. Okay, so that was kind of the genesis of this action?
Yeah, that was, you know, that was when they first started coming, you know, public. Back then, prior to myself, and there was a woman council member, I won't say her name because she's had some serious repercussions by doing the right thing, and then a very wonderful person, Frank Woods, who's now deceased. But we were basically, you know, exposing it was like an onion, you know, just the layers and layers.
The more you peel, the stinkier it got.
Yeah. And, you know, we were more focused on, you know, offshore accounts and, you know, various aspects with regards to the children's and elders funds being manipulated and so forth. And we stumbled across these water issues. And so this is basically the Department of Natural Resources under Leif Hillman, which he made news recently for the, you know, the meth pop and stuff like that, and hitting his wife in the face with a beer bottle. But he is the Department of Natural Resources director. They were running the tribe. And until there was a group of people that could, you know, redirect this craziness, the Department of Natural Resource would basically just show up with documents and say, you need to sign this. They could be 30, 40, 50, 100 pages long. And I'd say, I can't sign this. I haven't read this, you know. So they would just show up, tell the council what to sign, and then go on their way. So I think that this was happening a long time prior. But when people started demanding accountability for what they were signing for, which was myself and two other council members, things started getting pretty hectic.
All right. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Hello.
And you have a question or a comment here for Gary Lake.
Yeah.
Morning.
Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
What do you mean, good morning?
It's hey, Jim, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, bud. I just want to remind you, we are for keeping those dams in.
Of course we are.
You know that, and you know how I'm fighting for it.
Yes. And Jim is a spiritual leader for the Shasta people, and has done a wonderful job in helping you know, through many, many difficulties, both independent and as our tribe goes. So thank you, Jim.
Yeah, you transformed my head, huh?
I don't know.
All right, Jim. Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, so anyway, Gary, we're behind you on that, keeping that dam in.
Great. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Jim. 770-5633, if you had any questions or comments here in the final few minutes. I guess we're going to have you back here, and I guess maybe we should try to get Mr. Martinez and you.
Yes, that would be quite
the talk about this at some point. I mean, like I said, normally I think it's important for all of us to pay attention to it. And I'll be the first to admit that when you start dealing with environmental studies and tribal law and water rights issues, it's so easy for our collective eyes to glaze over and I'm going to let them deal with it. Right.
Yeah.
And this is very important because this could have not only severe repercussions to Rogue Valley agriculture, but also hunting, recreation, as it were, and also the ability for people to live in these rural areas. Mm-hmm. And that's what concerns me most of all here, Gary. Really does. And this is why I'm glad that we're having some of the sheriffs brought in here trying to, you know, taking a look seriously at these. What is this meeting? It's going to be about, 2 weeks from Friday? You're going to be having a public meeting here at the library. We'll have you back before that time.
Right.
Still, tell us
basically,
a bit more about
this is
that.
Kind of like this is just kind of water dam removal 101 for, you know, Southern Oregon people. The Siskiyou County people are heavily embroiled. I mean, like the Siskiyou County Water Users Association, they're doing fantastic work, but that fight has been fought for a very long time. What I'm trying to do is educate, because this is still Shasta territory. My dog in the fight is educating people as to this takeover by the Cutterook leadership. And once again, the people are beautiful people, but it's to educate the general population about the water that very well could be taken from them as it is being taken from Siskiyou County.
Does it rise to the level of corruption, or is it more, in your opinion, that, hey, you know, this really benefits our particular tribe if we end up getting this through because we can kick, you know, practically everybody off except us?
Well,
how high does this go? I mean,
it goes, you know, it goes. I mean, the BIA is financing part of this, and you know, I don't know how high it goes, but it goes clear to the top. It's one of the largest issues in the history of mankind with regards to water.
I wonder if the Cutterook is being used as a, I don't like to use that term. I'm not saying like they're dumb, but like the proverbial useful idiot as the stalking horse for the rewilding, the Agenda 21, which seems to be
a stepping stone. They're writing the manual of how to take water rights from people by using this watershed.
How does this dovetail, I guess, with what's been going on? I talked with folks from the BLM last week with getting rid of roads at Soda Mountain and that wilderness and managing that. Proposals for a Siskiyou Crest Monument.
Wow.
Would this have...
It definitely dovetails.
It's in our backyard, and it's coming. And one of the things we'll touch on next time is the suction dredge mining and how it was completely shut off in California, and it's coming here next.
And you can thank Craig Tucker and the Cutter leadership for that.
And that is, hands down, it's eco-terrorism. It's terrible. And...
All right. Well, let's just keep a few more calls in here before we take off. Hello, Lucretia. How you doing? About food for the fish? Go ahead. Fire away.
In the documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying? They were saying how there used to be about 1,000 bugs per whatever square, whatever, and mm-hmm. now there's like 36. And I'm thinking...
What, fewer bugs for the fish to eat?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's a major reason for the fish decline.
I don't know if that's something that you focus on or not, if you're looking at chemtrails or pollution issues or not.
No, I got my hands full with tribal issues.
Yeah, you're just working on it from that side. Thanks, Lucretia. Don, you had a question here, too. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Have you folks had any support from our county commissioners and the various mayors in our area?
We sat down Friday with a county commissioner and got them on board. So
okay, all of them are backing you?
Well, they're going through, I believe they're going through a coordination process right now.
Right now they are. And John Rasher is who we spoke with on Friday.
And then how about the mayors?
We have not gone to the mayor level yet.
Okay, I think that's important too.
And that's what this upcoming meeting is about.
All
it's
right, okay.
Bringing
I
people together.
To attend that.
Thank
okay.
you.
And by the way, that will be 2 weeks from this Friday in the big room at the downtown library, 6:30 or so.
6:30 starts. At 6:30.
Okay, figure going to be 6:30 tonight. I think we all got to hang out there and learn some more about this and understand why it is so important. Hello, Rick. How are you, Rick Holt, former Jackson County Commissioner? How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. This is deja vu. It's it's Elk Creek Dam all over again, guys.
Yeah.
And God bless you for doing what you do. You know, we were able to save the dam, and then as soon as I got out of office, they came back in. And the key is to get all the commissioners on board, get the, start these rallies again. The only way I was able to stop them pulling out the dam was when I went back at Christmas Eve and showed all the films and everything that we did on the rallies that people just did not want that dam out and the reasons for it. And the first big thing is that Governor Roberts planted a fish up Elk Creek and said it was they'd been up there for centuries,
yep.
which was a big lie.
Yeah, public sentiment is behind saving the dams. And Whitsett wrote a great article in the Upper Rogue Independent last week that came out regarding that.
Well, I've got lots of old stuff from the dam and what some of their tactics. I'd love to get them to you sometime.
Well, we certainly look forward to seeing you at the meeting then, a little over 2 weeks.
I'm going to try.
Don't give me a blah, blah, blah. We'll see you there, Rick, okay?
Hey, I don't get around much anymore, I'm
okay.
a little different.
We'll have somebody pick you up.
All right. Maybe we'll do it that way,
Thank
Rick.
You.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. So 2 weeks from this Friday, 6:30, I think I'm going to have to give up my normal sit around and do nothing.
We appreciate
kind of
that.
Stuff. And I'm definitely going to hang out there. We'll have you back, and we'll see if we can get the folks from Karuk. Is that how it's officially pronounced?
It just depends Karuk? On what decade you're in. But, Karuk, yeah, rolling R, Karuk.
Yeah, as long as you don't make me have to say Nicaragua, which I never could really do all that well, or Colombia. No, I'm just having a good time with you.
Yeah.
Gary, we appreciate you coming on. We'll
Thank
have you,
you
back. And Darren, always a pleasure. And by the way, before you take off, what about Bryce? Is he doing that?
Yes,
that
we're doing
again,
the
once again for
care
the troops?
Package drive for the troops. We're collecting donations again. And
I think I'll have you back on for another interview about that.
Great.
All right. Very good. 8:56 and change on KMED. Yes, indeed. It is now time for the Jaspers Constitutional Quiz. We'll do things constitutionally, and Jaspers will feed you outrageously. Outrageous, delectable, and very cosmopolitan. And all I ask is that if you're going to play this, that you not have won it within the last 30 days. All right? Jaspers brings you definitive burgers with an attitude, delicious combinations, wild, unique game meat such as buffalo, wild boar, Kobe beef, and this week Jaspers has venison as well. Stop by and see why folks enjoy this award-winning little place just north of the mall on Highway 99. 770-KMED, and let's find out who's here. Good morning.
Hey, Bill.
Who's this?
This is Aaron.
All right, Aaron, you want to take a stab at it?
Sure.
Who was the first colonist to die for the pending revolution against the British? Who was the first one? Was it A, Asgard Monktell? Was it B, Crispus Attucks? Was it C, Fortner Bouchard? Or was it D, Barry Satoru?
I would say C.
You're going to say C, Fortner Bouchard? It's a really good one. No, it's not the guess. Not the right one, though. I appreciate the try. Hi, KMBD. Who's this?
This is Wally.
Hi, Wally. Well, we know it's not Fortner Bouchard, so we're looking for the name of the first colonist to decide, or to die, rather, for the revolution against the British. Was it Asgard Monktell? Was it Crispus Attucks? Or was it Barry Satoru?
Barry Satoru.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't Barry Satoru either. Nice try. Hi, KMED, good morning. Who's this?
This is John.
All right, John. Well, we know we're down to the first colonist to die for the revolution. Was it Asgard Monktell or Crispus Attucks? What do you say?
I say Crispus Attucks.
And I say you are the winner.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yep, and let's get you set up here. We're going to put you on hold, okay?
No sweating.
All right, and then Mike's going to take care of you. Now, actually, interesting story. Crispus Attucks was a black man, and he was the first martyr of the American Revolution. Oddly enough, in Paul Revere's famous engraving, he was errantly depicted as white. So there you go. Interesting. Speaking of these kind of conversations, tomorrow I'm hoping to talk with John Aboulier. He's saying that this incident over the weekend with the Kane campaign, he says this is the beginning of the end for Kane. I'm not convinced about that at all. But on the other hand, he was the same one that said, Bill, don't get excited about Sarah Palin. She's going nowhere. He was right about that, too. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. Email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Got to run. Be kind. We're all struggling with something. We'll have a good conversation again tomorrow.